Welcome to Overtures. It was such a joy to interview this guest and talk about her crazy audition experience for the Fiddler National Tour, as well as catch up, learning about all the important projects she took on during the pandemic. All links are in the show notes. Take your seats, we'll be starting shortly. Other locations, but today's pretty good. It's kind of warm out today. Perhaps nearing the end of fool spring and getting into actual spring. We'll see. but yeah, hope everyone's doing amazing today, and I hope you all are having a great week. Welcome to episode 19 of Overtures, and I'll be starting with sharing a little of the quick video. Gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous. My guest today is a Brooklyn-based actor and musician and is a 2018 graduate of Wagner College's Theater Performance Program. Man, I guess I needed to warm up today. She spent a year performing on the national tour of the recent Broadway production of Fiddler on the Roof before moving to New York City in the beginning of 2020. During the pandemic, she's been participating in online theater projects when possible, including producing and starring in a fully rehearsed, fully virtual production of Lungs by Duncan McMillan, while also exercising her graphic design and social media marketing skills with organizations like Broadway Media, BA Hashtag Arts Hero, and The Civilians. I've known this guest for several years now and have been lucky to work with her on a few projects. She's so incredibly talented and puts her whole heart into every role. It shows. This is Danielle Allen.
Hi.
Hi. How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. So happy to talk to you again, because we were just saying before going live, it's been so long, before pandemic long, as with most things, but crazy, crazy, crazy to think about.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, for those, I mean, we obviously probably gathered this from the bio, but how do we know each other? Wagner. but we knew each other kind of right from the get-go. Now, granted, I was your wardrobe manager for your main stage debut in Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson.
That's true.
But we previously acted together in both 12 Angry Jurors and The Crucible.
Yeah, and I was just thinking about this, and I think 12 Angry Jurors is when we met.
I think so, yeah.
I don't think we encountered each other before then.
Yeah, I feel like I definitely had seen you in passing, as with honestly most upperclassmen at Wagner. Mm-hmm. I was who are all these people my freshman year? But yeah, 12 Angry Jurors was when we actually got to know each other.
Yeah, and what a weird show that was.
That was such a
funny. We did a show in Spiro.
Yeah, who does that? It was very interesting. For context for those watching, it was 12 Angry Jurors, but we did. It was a student-run production, and we did it in a lecture hall, which was so interesting because that very much forced, because we were all sitting around the table. It's not like we had a table long enough that we could all face out.
Yeah, and so I think you and I had vision was that it was they were just watching us organically at this table, so it's not we were going to all be on one side. But
yeah, and I think you and I mean, I know I had my back towards the audience for the show, but I couldn't remember if you were were you sitting on the side of the table?
I honestly you facing, couldn't tell I you. I think I was facing the audience, I think.
Yeah. I feel like I would have done a bit poorer if I had been facing the audience, because the lines for that show were such a toughie.
Honestly, one of the only things I remember from that experience was that there was a person in the show that I will not name who had a lot of lines.
Yes.
And they simply did not know the lines.
Simply did not, which is unfortunate.
And we were all on stage together. Yeah, we were all on stage together, so we could kind of bail them out. But it was just like I remember being very stressed out.
Yeah, I remember that too. Because it was a very sizable role, which is like tough for 12 Angry, but also just like as a whole, like I had a smaller role in it, but I just remember the lines are so spread out throughout the play that it's so conversational that it was so incredibly difficult to memorize.
I remember that too. And I similarly like didn't have a huge part. So it was like, I have one line on page 8 and then on page 23, I have a line.
Yeah. And and sometimes it'd be lines like, oh geez, what are you talking about? And then like, it keeps going and you're like, what's the cue line?
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that was a tough one. The Crucible was a bit easier in comparison in terms of the line memorization, but
yeah,
such an amazing job as Mary Warren in that.
Thank you. And that's like a dream that like, even before we did it, that was a dream role and is still a dream role. Like I would just love to do it again. Cause I also had such a great time doing that show. And that was like such a great group of people. And
that was a really wonderful cast.
Yeah.
It was Crucible asks for a lot of actors. And it was really fun to like get to work with that many people.
Yeah. And also just like such an interesting take on the material. And I think my parents are maybe still scarred from the opening of that show, but that's okay.
That's okay. Don't worry about it.
My poor parents had to sit through like that. And also like me doing Trojan Women, where I had a monologue about like incest, and they really put up with a lot.
And they were like, Danielle, are you sure you want to do this? And you're like, don't worry about it. It's fine.
And then Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson also had lots of not parent-friendly moments, so yeah, it just was a theme throughout.
Especially depending on Eric's improvisation throughout, with like different like lines at the very, very beginning.
That's true.
Yeah. But such what fun and wild shows to work on as a whole.
That's true, and I'm glad we got to do so many together. But I also think I was also thinking that like you just did like so many shows at school. Like you did so many like not only like performing, but also like associate directing and like doing stagehand stuff on just like a mind-blowing amount of productions. Like you were so involved. It was crazy.
I think if I'm like trying to like actively count my brain, because I think I did 8 student-run productions either on or off. I had to do the 4 different tech assignments, so that like goes up to 12, and then I assistant directed for Mickey. So yeah, I think like 13 shows. It was some crazy amount, but it was definitely one of those things where I was just like, I needed to get my hands on more.
Yeah, and it's so great that Wagner has such like a thriving like student run theater scene, because that was such a big part of, I mean, both of our experiences there.
Yeah, well, and it's been crazy to see how much it has grown since then, because like I feel like there's even more, because like Shakespeare on the Oval started right at the end of like my career at Wagner, but that's grown so much as well. So it's crazy to see how much they're constantly doing.
Yeah, but it's really great.
Yeah. Danielle, how did you first get started in theater?
Oh boy. I mean, my mom was formerly a dancer, and so she put my older sister and I into dance classes like pretty much as soon as we could walk. And my sister is a year older than me, so we were very close in age. And we were also in like piano lessons, so like the arts were just like literally since from what I can remember, like just like a part of our lives. And even as like a toddler, I used to tell people when I was 2 that I wanted to be a circus clown. And I used to like walk around in like a clown costume. I don't know why that was what I wanted to do. So like performing was just like very part of like the DNA of like what we were kind of already doing. And when I was 7 and my sister was 8, there was a high school that was doing The Wizard of Oz, and they wanted children to play the Munchkins, but you had to be 8 or older. So my older sister was going to do it. And I, at that age, like wanted to do anything that she did. Like I was very much like the younger sister that like wanted to copy her every move. So my mom very kindly drove me to a rehearsal and like basically like pleaded with the director, I have this child who like wants to do this so bad, but she isn't old enough. Like, could you think you can let her do it? And they were very nice. And they let me do that show. So that was my first experience like in a production. And I was like younger than everyone, but I have to say, I was chosen to be in the Lullaby League, and I had like a dance solo.
There's only three really of them, too.
I know. I really showed up all those older kids. But yeah, so that was my first experience in a production. And I mean, at that age, it was just like one of several things that I did. Like I was dancing, doing piano, like horseback riding. And then like I kind of did plays occasionally. So it was just kind of like one of like the litany of hobbies.
No, that's so fun because I also did a production of Wizard of Oz when I was much younger. And I remember there was like a handful of kids who like weren't quite old enough, but like I think an elementary music school teacher was like, no, they're talented. Just put them in there. They're mature. They'll get through it. And so I think it's very funny that those kinds of things come up. And I also remember like for like the Lullaby League and the Lollipop Guild, like those were strictly middle school roles when we were like not allowed to do them.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, it was not even not allowed to do them. It was more of just like they brought all the elementary schoolers in for like just that one gigantic scene. And then they're like, Right. Okay, the middle schoolers can do the rest because this is actually their show and not of elementary schools. But I think everyone has like comes in contact with the Wizard of Oz at some point.
I feel like it's a pretty common first show, which is kind of cool that we like share experience like that.
Exactly. So being that you were always involved in those kinds of things, because like I similarly grew up in that kind of environment too, where like my dad is a theater director and so is attending rehearsals and all that other stuff. But when was that moment for you that you were like, oh, but like I can do this with my career as well?
Yeah. I think that moment came like 12, 13. And I remember like having a specific moment where I was like, there are people that are like real estate brokers and bankers, and they do community theater like on the side, and that's how theater is in their life. And then there are people that like do this with their profession, and obviously that's really difficult. But I remember very consciously deciding at 13 that like I have to try to do it as my profession. Like I can't picture a life where I just pursue something else that I don't want to pursue and like never give it like my best shot.
Yeah.
But also around that age was when I really fell in love with it. Because like I had said, it was just kind of like one of many things that I did. And then when I got to junior high school, well, I was part of like a combined like junior senior high school. It was like grades 7 to 12, and it was all one theater program. And when I got there, I like auditioned for the fall play because like that was just like I said, just like something I did. And that first fall play that I was in, it was called Oh Promise Me, like Oh comma Promise Me exclamation point. Never heard of it since. Like I don't think it's done anywhere. But it was like a small cast, and I was like in seventh grade, and everyone was older than me. And as like a 12-year-old, like they were like the funniest, like coolest people I had ever met. And I really fell in love with like the community part of theater, like a group of people like telling a story together and like having a lot of fun. And that was also the first time that I really learned about like the process of creating a character and making a show and like text analysis. And like, that was the first time I had been introduced to that, which like really like lights up my nerd brain. Like I really like love that part of rehearsal. So those two kind of components were introduced to me at that age. And I like really like was obsessed. Like that was the age where I started telling people like, I want to be on Broadway. Like, because I just couldn't, after like that experience in that play, I couldn't really picture myself like doing anything else. And all the other stuff that I had been doing, like the horseback riding, like the gymnastics I'd also done, like all of that kind of fell away so I could focus on this one thing. So yeah, like 12, 13 was kind of when I fell in love with it, and then kind of consciously decided like I have to like try to do this with my career. And there was not really a lot of questioning after that.
That's really awesome, because I feel like that moment can come so much later in life for many. And so that in many ways, that's such a blessing that it came at the age of 13, because I know for me, it was like freshman year of high school. But it was also funny because it's of that similar thing of like doing the high school show for the first time and like being really young and like being surrounded by these older, cool people, but also focusing on the work. And so I think it's so interesting how similar that is.
Yeah. And also just like, I mean, like, the town I grew up in was pretty small, like, pretty conservative, and, like, these, like, theater people were so, like, radically, like, accepting, like, it was just, like, being introduced to a community where I felt so, like, at home, and I would, like, it was, yeah, I just really fell in love with the community part of it. And there was also, like, a community theater in my town that did, like, a youth show every summer. And so it was, like, basically, like, the all-star team of the theater kids from all the surrounding schools would do this, like, summer youth show. And that was, like, a big part of my deciding to pursue it, too. Because that theater, like, that was, like, such a cool experience doing that, too.
Yeah, yeah. The community of it all just really, I think, hooks us all in there. It really does.
Yeah, because it's so special just to be able to, like, tell a story with a group of people in the way that theater does. And I mean, TV and film are, like, similar, but, like, doing the rehearsal process and, I don't know, going through it with people is really fun.
Absolutely. Because with film and TV, like, I feel like the rehearsal process is so much shorter. It's very individualized. And then you show up to set and see what happens, which is also has its merits and things like that. But I think theater definitely has more of that bonding for that extended period of time. That's really, really special. Right. And then obviously you went to Wagner, which created a whole nother theater community of its own.
Yes.
And, like, granted, we talked about a whole bunch of Wagner things, but then also right after college, you joined the national tour of Fiddler on the Roof. And yes. I have many, many questions about this, but we have a little promo video from it. So I'll go ahead and share that real quick. And then we can get started on asking all the lovely questions about auditioning, et cetera, et cetera. To us and our good fortune, be happy, be healthy, long life. And if our good fortune never comes, just do whatever comes. Drink the That's so, so special. I remember even, like, seeing the Broadway videos are playing in my ear, but not yours. I remember seeing the Broadway production of it and being so taken and realizing, like, oh, I'm seeing Fiddler in a brand new light and understanding that I hadn't seen it before. So I could imagine being a part of the national tour version of it was so, so special.
Yeah, and I hadn't seen it on Broadway, but I was a huge fan of Bart Scheer. Like in high school, I was, like, obsessed with his revival of South Pacific and, like, the PBS recording of it. So getting to, like, work with him was, like, I still, like, am just, like, bowled over that I got to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. So what was the going back to the beginning? What was that audition and callback process like? I'm sure it was insane.
So I was a senior at Wagner. It was spring of 2018, which is 4 years ago now, which is crazy. But that semester I had scheduled all of my classes on Monday and Wednesday, which in retrospect, like, was crazy because I was in class from, like, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. and then, like, would go to rehearsal after that. But I did that because I really wanted to audition, and I wanted my Tuesday, Thursday, Friday free to go to the city and audition.
Yeah.
Just because, like, I really hadn't done any professional productions before. I hadn't really done summer stock. Like, I just didn't have a ton of experience. And so much of, like, the senior performance year at Wagner is, like, learning how to audition.
Right.
Like, in a class setting. And so I really wanted to, like, dip my feet into the professional world of that. Like, my goal was, like, not to, like, book anything. I did not at all think that was going to happen. I just wanted to, like, get experience with, like, the process of, like, showing up at Pearl Studios and, like, showing a book to an accompanist, like, that whole thing. So it was, like, the end of March or very early April, and there just was, like, a posting on Playbill that was, like, Fiddler National Tour, first national non-equity open call. So it was an open call, but you had to, like, sign up for an appointment.
Which is helpful. So helpful.
Yes, but also you have to be the one to, like, see it first, because obviously those are going to go really fast. And I was really lucky that I saw it like immediately. So I kind of like had my pick of appointment times, which was really just like sheer luck. And if that didn't happen, like this whole series of events would not have occurred. Because I mean, I didn't have an agent like a lot of other people
right.
that ended up getting the show. They got like appointments through representation. That was not going to be an option for me. So I got an appointment on, it was a Wednesday, and it was a Wednesday I was already going to take off of school because I had gotten tickets to see the doubleheader of Angels in America on Broadway.
Oh my gosh.
So it was like the 1 p.m. was like Millennium Approaches, and then like 6 p.m. was Perestroika. So I was already going to take that day off of school to see that show. It's my favorite play. I had gotten these tickets for myself like in advance. I was going by myself, like sitting in the back row, like just.
You were like, I'm so ready excited. Just for me.
Yeah. So I got an appointment for that morning at like 12 or something. And I had to be at the theater at, no, maybe the appointment was like 11:30. So I had to be at the theater at 1. And I was like, it'll be fine. No big deal. And so I went to the city for the open call. There were some Wagner people at the audition, which was really cool.
Current students or those who had like graduated before you?
Those who had graduated. So it was kind of cool to like be in touch with people I had known. But as open calls and auditions do, it was running behind.
Of course.
My appointment time came and went, and I was still there. And I was like, I've had these Angels in America tickets for months. I spent good money on them. It's my favorite play. I'm not going to miss it. And I'm really good at like self-sabotaging myself at auditions. Like there's always kind of a voice in my head that's like, you're not going to get the job anyway. Like why even show up? Which I've spent a lot of time trying to combat.
It's a tough
and it was, thing. Yeah. And it was definitely present that day. It was like, you should just leave and go to the show. Like you're not going to get this job anyway. Like it's okay. But I was like, I will stay until 12:30. And if they don't call me in by then, I have to go to the show and I'm not going to give up the tickets. So it was like 12:25 and they were like, Danielle Allen.
Oh my
God. So they called me in like just in time. And it was like, it's another part of this experience that was like, again, sheer luck. Like I was 5 minutes away from leaving.
That's so crazy.
So yeah. So I went in and I sang my little like 16 bar cut and the casting director was Jason Sires behind the table who also cast Anastasia. Maddie Kendall knows him as well.
Yes.
And he like looked at my resume and was like, oh, you go to Wagner. That's so cool. I love Wagner. You're graduating soon. That's awesome. And that was pretty much it. I like grabbed my stuff and like ran down 8th Avenue to the Neil Simon Theater. And I sat through like 8 hours of Angels in America. So it was like a great day.
Yeah, I mean, literally a great day. Do you remember what you sang?
Yes, I sang I Loved You Once in Silence from Camelot.
Ooh.
Which is maybe like Fiddler on the Roof, Camelot, what? But I thought it like made sense with like Forbidden Love, which is so much of what the sisters go through.
And the same era of music.
Yeah, exactly. So, and I'd run it by Wendy, the professor at Wagner. I'd been like, does this make sense as a choice? And she's like, yeah, that's fine. So I sang that. And I had obviously sat through this like Broadway show and I was not like thinking about like, will I get a call back? I was like, I did it. Like I did the audition.
You're like, I did it in time and made it to the show.
That was like the achievement. So a few days later, I got an email with a callback. I was like shocked. And I was called back initially for Huddle, which I was like really shocked because I was like, I'm too short. There's no way. And I didn't really see myself as this like romantic lead. I thought I was going to be called in for the younger characters. So I was pretty surprised. But I prepared the material, which was, there were two Huddle scenes. There was like a Huddle Perichick scene and there was a Huddle scene with Tevye at the train station and it was Far From the Home I Love after it. So I prepared that and I showed up, this was like the week after the open call was this first callback.
That's a quick turnaround for callbacks.
Yeah. And this first callback is the most iconic audition I've ever been to for several reasons. So I got to Pearl like pretty early as I do, just like ready to like settle in and, you know, relax before I had to go in the room. And I don't know why I had this idea, but for some reason I was like, I can go into the stairwell at Pearl and like warm up a little bit and then come back and like be ready for the audition. I think I've done that before. So like I had this like memory in my head that I could do that. So I went into the stairwell without my phone, without anything. And I just like did some like little warm-ups. It's like, okay, like time to go back to the audition. and I couldn't open the door. The door had locked behind me.
Oh,
so
no.
I was locked in the Pearl Studio stairwell. So no phone, didn't know what time it was, didn't know how much time I had. So I was like banging on the door. No one heard me because the stairwell is kind of like in this little hallway and like there was no one in it at that time.
Oh my God.
So I was like, I'm not going to miss this callback. So I basically just started running up and down the stairs trying to find a door that would open. And not all of them, like most of them were locked. And it kind of reminds me of like, did you ever watch like Scooby-Doo?
Yes.
Like when they're in like a haunted house and like would open a door and there's like a chaotic monster scene like happening. They were like, shut the door and run away.
Yeah.
Like it was kind of that. Like there was one door that I opened and it was like an active construction site.
And I was, and you're like, no, definitely not.
Because like the other floors in that building are not, you know, studios. They're like this other stuff.
Oh my God.
But I found a door that would open and it looked like a school. Like, I think it was some kind of school. So I was like, I got to get to the elevator somehow. So I basically just like trespassed in this school to get to the elevator. And I had to go all the way back down to the bottom and then back up to Pearl.
Right.
And
they have their own elevator shaft. It's so confusing.
Yeah. But I made it with like minutes to spare. So that was my adventure that day. And maybe because that had happened, I don't know, like it was obviously I was very physically like warmed up because I had been like running.
Yeah.
And like I didn't have time to like sit outside the audition room, like overthink things. But I like went into the room and had the best audition of my life. Like they asked me to do the scene into the Far From the Home I Love. And I don't want to, I'm not trying to like say this to brag because this has maybe only happened to me this one time, but like, it's like a feeling where you have such a good audition that you feel like the whole energy of the room like shift.
Mm.
Like everything was working. Like I felt so present. I felt like in the moment. Like it was just like an unbelievable, like it never happens where you feel like you execute on your fullest potential, but like literally that's what it felt like.
Oh my gosh.
So it was just like it's literally only happened to me this one time that I feel like I did so well in an audition. And it was just Jason Stiers behind the table. There's a reader, there's an accompanist, and that was it. But when I was done, Jason Stiers was like, well, we're going to see you again. I was like,
and you're
okay.
Like, oh, sounds great.
Great. And he was like, well, you look really young, so we're also going to call you back for Huddle again, but we're going to call you back for Sprinza too. Who, if you don't know Fiddler, there's five daughters. Huddle is the second oldest. Sprinza is the second youngest. She's like the second from last. And they kind of skipped over the middle daughter, Hava, because they were really looking for like a dancer, which is not me. I kind of found out in that room that I was going to be called back again. And that callback was the following week of April. So now we're now in the third week of April. I've had an audition a week. And that third callback did not go well because I was basically just trying to recreate what I had done at the first callback. You know, like it's when you have that thing and you're singing and you're like, what did I do last time that worked? Let me try to recreate that moment instead of being like present.
Instead of actually being present.
Yeah. So I kind of fell victim to that. And so I did like Far From the Home I Love again. I think I did the Hava Fiedka scene. And this time there was Bart's associate, Sari Ketter, was in the room. But I really feel, I felt like I blew it. Like, I was like, this is it. I'm not going to get called back again.
Nice.
Yeah. But obviously I was like very grateful. I was like, I made it this far. Like, that's so cool. But I really tried to let it go after that callback. Cause I really thought I had screwed it up for myself. But a few days later, I got another email that was like, you have been invited to final callbacks. Mm. And it was like the following week after that third callback. So it actually happened pretty fast. It was four auditions in 4 weeks.
Wow.
In April of my senior year at Wagner. So in this final callback email, they're like, Bartlett Sher will be in the room and all of the producers will be in the room, like, just so you know. And I was not called back for Huddle at final callbacks, which I was like, fair, I didn't really do well. but I was called back for Sprinza. and the Shprinza material was, I should have explained this before, but the Shprinza material was the Hava material because Shprinza doesn't have that many. It doesn't really have like a scene. So they were giving people like the Hava scene. So yeah, I like showed up to this final callback and it's like, there's obviously like so much pressure in a moment like that where you're like, I barely have done professional auditions. I'm still in school. And I'm about to sing for like this famous Broadway director that I've idolized like for years. And it's really like a moment where like, either I can handle this pressure or I can't, like it's one or the other. And I, you know, you just have to like trust yourself and trust that you, you know, did things in the prior weeks that have gotten you to this moment. And they obviously like what you're doing or you wouldn't be here.
Yeah.
And I had to trust my training at Wagner and like all of the practice auditions I had done in like acting five. Like I just tried to like really trust and that I knew what I was doing and to not let that pressure like crack me. Because I walk in the room and it's like a dance studio, like a horizontal room with a mirror. Mm-hmm. And against the mirror, it's like wall to wall people, all these producers of the show. And like right in the middle was Bartlett Sher and Jason Sires. And I was like, just look at them. Like, don't look at anyone else. I don't even know who else was in there because I was not looking at them. And I did my Hava Fiedka scene. And then they asked me to sing for my book. So I sang I Love You Once in Silence again. And then Bart like asked me a question about my dance experience because they were like trying to find a Hava cover. And I told him and then that was it. And I left the room and I felt like I had done like a pretty good job. But I was just really proud of myself for like getting through it and like accomplishing the like, getting through the whole process. So that was the last week of April. I graduated from Wagner on May 11th. And the day before that, I got an email from Jason Sires that was like, hey, I know you haven't heard from us, but like, keep waiting. Bye. It was like a weird.
That's so vague.
It was so vague. And then the next day I was like running up to Michelle Pock in my cap and gown being like, what does this mean? Tell me what this means. And also it should be said that Michelle Pock like helped me through that whole process. I like coached
with
her. Like she was amazing. Yeah, she's just the best. Everyone knows this already. But so yeah, that was the day before my graduation. And then I graduated. And then a week after my graduation, I got the email with my offer. So it was just like, it like blows my mind. Cause like the timing was so insane that like literally a week after graduating, like that doesn't happen.
No,
frankly.
No. Yeah.
So it felt so bizarre that it was like happening to me. Especially cause I don't know. I felt like so like undeserving. There were like so many talented people in my class and I was like, why is this happening to me? And I like wasn't like a huge star in college by any means, so it was just like a combination of like right project, right person, right time. But yeah, it was like mind-blowing, the timing and the process.
And like I didn't even realize that you had been going through all those auditions at that time. Yeah. We just like didn't even, I had no idea. And so when you had posted like on social media being like, surprise, I was like, wait, what? When did all this happen?
I know. And I didn't post excited. Until September. Right. So between May and September, I didn't get my contract until the end of July. So I kind of had this summer where I like had,
just, like,
I
didn't sat really, on it.
Yeah, I couldn't, didn't really feel like I could tell people because I was like, it's not official. I haven't signed the contract. But this is like, this thing is happening that's going to change my life, but like it hasn't happened yet. And so I just like spent a weird summer like waiting tables and like doing a Shakespeare in the Park show. And that the Shakespeare in the Park show was actually my first like paid professional theater job, which was cool. But and then I signed the contract at the end of July and then it started to feel more real, but then I kind of waited till like the press release went out to tell people. So yeah, I had like a weird like limbo summer before it happened.
Yeah, I could imagine that must have been very strange. But then how long was the tour for?
We started in October and we had no breaks, no layoffs at all until the following July. And then we had that month of July off. And then the month of August was my final month. And I mean, the tour is still going. It kept going.
I keep forgetting.
After that. I left and was shut down in March 2020. Mm. And it picked back up again a few months ago. I think they just did their 100th show.
Gotcha.
But some people that I did it with are still on the tour. So it is still going. If you would like to see Feather on the Roof, it is out there.
Go see it. Go see it. I honestly didn't even realize that it was still running. But like even the amount of time that you were on tour is a very long time on tour. So
yeah, it was
a
year.
Really impressive. It's really impressive. I have a few Instagram questions in relation to Fiddler in particular. These two questions that I got are pretty much the same, but I'll read them both in case you catch some nuances that you enjoy. Okay. The first one is from our good friend Liam Abate. Is there anything you learned performing in Fiddler that gave you a new perspective on it? And then likewise, from Chris XC34, something new you learned about Fiddler by performing it rather than from being a student.
Okay, so they're basically asking like what I learned about Fiddler the show.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I don't think I've been asked that before. But obviously Fiddler is like a classic of the American theater, like for good reason, because it's amazing. It's so good. And the material is so good. It's like the book is amazing. It's like such a compelling story. So it was, I think what I learned about it is that like it's bottomless. Like I was doing 8 shows a week for a year, and literally every show, if I was like, you know, clocked in, tuned in to what was going on, like there were always new thoughts to think. There was always new stuff to discover, even though I did not have like a big role. Just like being a part of the story every night, like literally until closing, there was like literally new stuff to learn every time. And also like specifically about my character Sprinza, like she kind of falls under the radar because she's not a big part. And like the three older sisters are kind of, you know, falling in love and it's like a big deal. But something I learned about her specifically is she starts the show as like the fourth of five daughters, like very much a child. Her older sisters are taking care of everything.
Right.
And then one by one throughout the show, each of them leave. And then suddenly she's the oldest sister by the end.
Yeah.
And the family is being kicked out of their home. And so all of a sudden by the end, she really grows from child to adult. And she takes on so much emotional responsibility. And by the end of the show, she's, you know, helping her family leave their home and is kind of like the emotional, like, part of the emotional glue that's holding the family together. So that was like a really rewarding journey to take part in every night that I never realized having seen Fiddler before, that because you don't really notice it, but then by the end of the show it's just her and Bielka and Golden and Tevye, and you're like, oh, she's the oldest one, she's doing everything the older sisters are doing at the beginning of the show,
right?
So that was definitely something I learned about it and was really rewarding to be a part of every night.
That's super special. And as soon as you started mentioning it, I was like, oh, like she's watching them one by one. And the idea that she's seen how each of the sisters like took on that adult role, but even also being at the end, fulfilling that role while also the role is completely changing because they're having to move locations as well. And kind of like that learning of like, how does this role work now?
And part of what's like actually rewarding about not having like so much of a voice in the show, like not her perspective isn't shared very often, is like sometimes I'm like, maybe she's seeing her three sisters leave and is like resenting them and being like, I'm never gonna do that. And some nights I played it like that, and maybe she's watching her three sisters leave and is also longing to leave, but she feels like she can't. And sometimes I played it like that, and that's like, again, part of the genius of Fiddler is that there's like, it's just so emotionally rich that like there are so many possibilities.
Yeah, that's so, so special. And kind of akin to this question, but also like slightly different, is there anything that you learned about yourself? Like, I mean, working on this show, but also by going on tour, because like, obviously one can learn a lot about themselves by going on tour, but on tour with this production, maybe.
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. What did I learn about myself by going on tour with this production? I think I'm more equipped to more generally answer like what I learned about going
on tour. That's fine. It was a big question, so feel free to pick it apart.
It was like weirdly like my fifth year of college in a way, because like I started in September, like I would start school, and it was like I learned things that you can't learn in school, like how to do 8 shows a week. Like, that's not something you can know what it's like until you do it. What I really learned was how to, like, what I personally needed to do 8 shows a week. Like, I have to nourish my body in this way. I have to save this much energy. I can explore the city a little bit, but like, I need this time to rest so I can do the show tonight. And I've never really lost sight of the fact that like, I was there to do a job. I was not, you know, being paid to like travel. I was being paid to travel the country and, you know, but like, I was there to do a job and tell a story.
Right.
And that was really important to me. What I really learned about myself was, yeah, like what I needed to accomplish that. And yeah, we did 8 shows a week for 11, or I guess it was like 10 straight months or something, while traveling. And it was, you know, obviously incredibly strenuous, and touring is very stressful and very intense in a way that like doing Broadway is actually not. Cause when you're doing Broadway, you get to like go home to your family and friends and your familiar environment in your home.
Yeah.
And on tour, you're constantly in an unfamiliar place with these people that you kind of just met. And like, you can't cook because you're living in a hotel.
Yeah.
So it's like, you have to really take charge of your self-care and taking care of yourself. And definitely, I did not always succeed. I definitely had times like where I was not very mentally healthy or physically healthy. I was not eating right. But all of those experiences like taught me like what I needed to survive in that environment. Okay, and also this would change from show to show also, because like the physical demands of every show you do are different. But I learned like what I basically need to survive in that environment, which is incredibly helpful if I ever tour again.
Yeah, absolutely. I think those are all really valuable things that that we don't necessarily always talk about when it comes to tour. It's like, oh, wow, like you went to see all these amazing places and so on and so forth. But I think, again, yeah, like you're saying, there's so much self-prep involved and the taking care of yourself that I think you and also even like Maddie Kendall would agree with, especially as like for her being like a dancer on tour and like being an actor on tour, there's still like that same amount of like, how do you take care of yourself? How can you make sure that you can do the shows? Or like Angie Kakuza in a previous episode talking about like the swings who are checking in and being like, it's okay if you can't do the show tonight, because then that means you can do it for 3 more nights after.
Right. And yeah. And I actually,
those things.
I watched both of those episodes that you're referencing.
Amazing.
And I think our 3 tour experiences are so different and so interesting. And I feel like a piece of advice that I give to people who want to tour is to like, to know what you want out of the experience. And for me, like I said, like I wanted, like the doing the job was the highest priority to me. But like, if I were doing Baby Shark live, like Angie is, like maybe my highest priority would be like the travel and the fun. And so that would shape my tour experience in a different way.
Yeah.
Like knowing what your priorities are, like in advance of going out on the road, I think is really important. And yeah, figuring out how to take care of yourself is hugely important.
And like all, and any and all answers are correct. It's just knowing what you want going into it.
Yeah, definitely.
And then another quick little Instagram question from Lima Bate. Do you have a favorite story from performing on tour?
Oh man. Oh my
gosh.
I'm sure
there's so many to choose from.
There's literally so many things went wrong that like, I don't remember them all. Like show mishaps. Like people always ask me about like mishaps. And like, I literally don't remember all of them because they happen so much. But like, there's so many like funny mishap stories or like funny things that happened. Like once there was a woman in the front row who took off her shoes and socks during the show and propped her bare feet against the conductor stand. And we like from backstage, we have like a screen where we see the conductor. And so we saw Michael, our conductor, and just like feet behind him. And we were like, what is happening? So that's a really funny one.
Oh my God.
There was also like, there was a few times where like, I mean, the wedding scene in Fiddler, there was always stuff going wrong because it's like it's a full cast on stage for like, I don't know, like 20 minutes. Like it's
such
a long
scene.
Yeah. So that stuff went wrong during that, I think, often, and we all had to kind of keep it together. And I remember once there's a point in the beginning where Model is walking in and Zytel is circling him, and they're holding the huppa above their heads. And the prop huppa, like, we were all standing to the side, like, couldn't do anything, but the prop huppa was, like, coming apart, like, the pole was, like, detaching from the top. And Danny Arnold, who was the amazing Mordka and Tevye understudy, was, like, carrying the part that was, like, breaking. And so we were all, like, watching it, like, what's he gonna do? What's happening? And he was, like, trying to, like, fix it, like, as he was carrying it out. Oh, my gosh. Literally so many things like that. Like times when we are understudies go on. There was a time where an understudy for Perchik went on, and in the lesson scene with Sprinta and Bielka, like, he forgot the lesson. And this was, like, way, like, late in the tour. And so I had done the scene a million times, and I basically had to improvise to, like, get us through the scene. I was like, I think last time we were talking about this in the Bible, and, like, just trying to.
Oh my gosh, trying to
have more lines that night.
Well, like, talk about bringing it back to, like, 12 Angry Jurors for a hot sec. Like, it's amazing the little things we learn on small shows that end up helping us down the line.
It's true. Yeah. In student-run theater and in professional theater, people might forget their lines and you need to improvise.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that particular experience was scary because it's just like Perchik, Bielka, and Sprinza. And I mean, the girl who played Bielka was amazing, obviously, but she was pretty young. She was 17. So I kind of felt like seniority of, like, I have to get this back on track.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. And so luckily the pandemic didn't interrupt your tour when you were on it. Obviously it impacted so many people and everyone else in this business, but that allowed you to get more involved in graphic design and social media marketing. Do you want to tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I got back from the tour in, like, September 2019. I spent a few months living with my mom, and then I moved to the city in January of 2020, which, when you say that now, it's like a setup for a joke. You know what the punchline is.
Yeah.
So, like, every other, like, emerging career actor in March 2020, I had to be like, okay, like, what now? Because we didn't know it was going to happen. And something that really drew me in at that time was this movement of arts workers trying to get funding and relief for the economy, for the arts economy specifically. And there's a movement called Be an Arts Hero that has an Instagram account, a website, they're all over the place. And basically one day I was, like, following the movement very closely because I was very invested. And one day they were just like, does anyone know how to use Canva? Like, we need some help, like, making stuff. And I knew how to use Canva. So I was like, I can help. And then that kind of kickstarted this journey of me learning how to graphic design, like, literally, like, as we went, and to use, like, Photoshop and stuff like that. And then I eventually, like, transitioned to their social media team, which taught me a lot about, like, social media from, like, a business marketing perspective. And it was really rewarding to work with that group because they were focused on, you know, procuring relief for the sector I was a part of. So that kind of became my my pandemic journey. And I'm fully still, like, plan on becoming an actor. This is just kind of like my bridge between pandemic and what's next.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting because it's all kind of storytelling in a different way. Marketing is basically just storytelling for a brand. And I find it really fun to kind of do in theater circles because you get to work with really cool people. And I worked with a theater company called The Civilians, which is based in Brooklyn. And it was co-founded by Michael Friedman, the composer of Bloody Buddy, Andrew Jackson, who passed away very young.
Right.
And his, like, history is just so intertwined with that company. So getting to, like, tell that story was so cool.
Yeah.
And I'm really interested in people that were actors or in the arts economy that have, in the pandemic, kind of realized or found other things for themselves to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of kickstarted this whole, like, kind of labor movement, I feel like, for actors and people who work in theater, where, you know, there's, like, movements now, like, no more 10 out of 12s,
yes.
Stuff like that, where I feel like we're all kind of realizing how valuable we are and how many, like, practices we've put up with for so long that were not sustainable. There's a movement to, like, to, like, dismantle, like, the show must go on mentality. I'm kind of transitioning this.
No, that's okay. That's okay. No, it's okay. I have notes that we wanted to talk about this because you had mentioned wanting to talk about this on the show. And I want to backtrack just a little bit because I did have an Instagram question about working with Be an Arts Hero and talking about the standing in Times Square to support Be an Arts Hero. So what was that like with that event in particular?
Yeah, that was really cool. It was like pretty early pandemic. It was like June or July. And there was just like Be an Arts Hero just needed like 100 people to represent the 100 members of the Senate. And it was people from all parts of the economy. And I had been an usher at Lincoln Center. So I was like kind of there as an usher, but also an actor. And yeah, it was like pretty much like a staged protest. Like we rehearsed and we got to Times Square and got to just kind of stand there with our signs and like sing and tell people going by like what we were doing, what we were fighting for. And yeah, it was really, really rewarding and really cool because it felt like a real moment of community in the early pandemic when the arts community felt so scattered. So that was really cool to be a part of.
Absolutely. And speaking of finding community, especially in that very early part of the pandemic, you also did a fair amount of Zoom and online theater. And boy, I know how difficult Zoom theater can be, but yeah. In many ways, I also know how special it is to work on those kinds of projects. And I'm sure you had a similar feeling. And you were part of the play Lungs by Duncan McMillan. Right. Do you want to talk about how you got involved in that in particular?
Yes, I got involved in that with my dear friend, Jacob Tarkanish, who's an actor. Who I've known since high school. And it basically just started with us like separately going insane from not having done theater in months. And so like in November 2020, he was like, can we just like get on Zoom and like read stuff together? And I was like, please, like I would love that so much. And so we just like kind of showed up every week and like would read scenes with each other. And we eventually read Lungs, which is a two-person play. If you aren't familiar, it's about a couple deciding whether or not to have a baby. Kind of in the midst of like a climate crisis that is slightly more advanced than what is currently happening.
Yeah.
So we read this play and Jacob was like, what if we just like invited people to this? Like what would happen? Like if we memorized
we just did it?
Yeah. Like what if we just did it? And that was really empowering at a time where like, you know, like getting work was like pretty impossible.
Yeah.
So like just like doing something ourselves, like, okay, I guess we can just do that. And so we brought on a small team of people. We brought in Courtney McGowan, Wagner graduate, brilliant, beautiful, wonderful, very smart, to direct. And then we brought on a stage manager, Sarah Williams. And so Jacob and I memorized the whole show. Courtney blocked the whole show on Zoom. And yeah, it was like nothing else I've ever done. And it was very challenging. We had technical difficulties at one point during a run. But also like memorizing that much text I had never done because it's like a two-hander.
Yeah.
And honestly, like the female part is kind of weighted heavier in the lines department. So I had so much to learn that I just had never done.
Yeah.
I know it was really cool because it was like I was playing an adult woman who was like getting pregnant and I tend to play very young people, as you know. So it was really cool to kind of claim that for myself that like I'm 25 years old and I can play an adult.
Yeah.
And you know, like, no one is stopping me because I'm producing this myself.
No, I totally get that. I also tend to type a bit younger these days as well now that I'm like out and about. So I get that.
Yeah. So it was really cool. And we did it last February where we just kind of invited people to come on and watch us do this show. And it seemed like people really seemed to come and I got so many messages and it was just like really empowering and really special.
Yeah. It's so special. Absolutely. Just to be able to like, okay, everyone, let's like do this thing. And I know obviously, so going back to this labor movement that has developed, looking at all the different notes that I wrote about it, you already started the segue, which is really fantastic. So starting with eliminating 10 out of 12s, for those who don't necessarily know what that is because they're not necessarily in the theater world, how would you explain it to them?
So 10 out of 12 means out of 12 hours in the day, you work for 10 of them, like you rehearse for 10 of them. And then the other 2 hours are like your lunch and dinner break or whatever. And that's kind of, so like saying like you want to eliminate that is basically kind of a catch-all for saying that we want to eliminate, like, abusive theater practices that have been, like, kind of romanticized and accepted for so long, mm-hmm. But actually are, like, pretty hard on everyone involved.
Yeah.
And I feel like, especially in our training, we're kind of indoctrinated to accept, like, a scarcity model. Yeah. Like, there are so many performers and only so many parts. And so if you get this job, like, doing summer stock in, like, a barn in Idaho and you have to clean the toilets, like, you have to be grateful, like, that kind of thing. Yeah. And I mean, no disparaging to anyone who's ever done summer stock in a barn in Idaho. Like, you are valid. It's a great if you had a good time.
Yeah.
But, like, so many of these jobs, like, don't pay a living wage. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and certainly a lot of that's, like, a funding problem, which is, it all is kind of just, like, a examining how capitalism has, like, really impacted the structure of theater. We do 8 shows a week because it makes the most money. Yeah. We do 10 out of 12 because we can rehearse the most in the least amount of time. And it's kind of all about the bottom line. And the show must go on is another way of saying, like, you have to run yourself into the ground to make sure we get the money out of this show, which is, like, the more you think about it, it's like, why did we And it's because we're, like, we romanticize this growing up. Like, the show must go on. Like, that means I'm a real actor if I went on stage with a sprained ankle. It's like, you got to take care of yourself.
Yeah.
And I feel like the pandemic has made a lot of people realize, like, we're valuable and we deserve a living wage. And we deserve, you know, practices that will, like, serve us instead of us, like, serving the bottom line is basically how I summarize it.
Because especially for 10 out of 12s, like, yes, you have 2 hours that are, like, to yourself. However, when you're not in those rehearsal, that's kind of like sleep time. There's no room for, like, being with family or having a family. There's no room for, like, social times or just, like, a mental break other than sleep. So that's a whole issue. But even talking about having a living wage, like you were saying with those summer stock, like, looking into listings of online jobs and seeing the stipend might be over $1,000 and you're like, wow, that's a lot of money, but the contract is for, like, six weeks and that's still and less than, like, $200 a week, which doesn't cover rent.
And stuff like that means that people with privilege, people who are coming from higher income families, are the people that are being allowed into this industry. Mm-hmm. And the people who can't afford that are just being left out. And that's, you know, that's why we have so many problems with, you know, kind of just the people at the top getting to stay at the top and, like, less diverse communities not having as much of a voice, because sometimes just, like, lower income communities, like, they can't afford it.
Yeah. Because, like, there are certain jobs that I look through, I'm like, that looks cool, but that's not going to pay my rent. And I scroll past, you know, I definitely agree. Like, the show must go on mentality comes from money. And when money comes before people, then I just don't think we're not doing theater right, let alone many other things correctly. To put it as plain and simple as that.
Yeah. And I mean, I even, like, kind of before this even started happening, like, during Fiddler, like, if I called out during a show, I would feel so guilty. Yeah. I was like, I feel like I failed by, like, not being able to go on, like, when I had a cold. And, like, that's so crazy. And it's because we kind of grow up, like, with this romanticized idea of, like, being an actor is, like, being invulnerable, and, like, running yourself into the ground in service of a show is, like, honorable. Yeah. And I think we just need to start deconstructing that, and it's not honorable. And, like, what is honorable is taking care of yourself.
Absolutely. And I think if that means, like, making things a bit smaller scale so that people can be paid fairly, that, like, I'm down for that. That's understandable. But also I think there's a certain amount of holding accountable, not necessarily production companies, but bigger theaters and things like that that can afford it and then choose not to as well. Because I know, like, there's a Twitter account, I think it's, like, Fair Wage on Stage,
has been
pointing out, like, the bigger, like, wages of, like, the higher ups, but then the tiny, tiny little contracts for those working on productions too.
Yeah. And just, like, if you Google, like, Williamstown Theater Festival, Walnut Street Theater, like, the O'Neill Festival, like, all of these places have had kind of, like, uprisings in the last year. Mm-hmm. And, like, some of them are, like, the executives are being paid, like, close to, like, upper six figures.
Yeah.
And you're not paying your production staff. And it's, And I'm like the first to say that, like, I don't know what the solution is. I just know that, like, we've kind of identified this problem and we need to start chipping away at it so that, like, the younger generations have kind of a more sustainable industry to enter into.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I 100% agree. Definitely zero idea of solutions, but it's like identifying the problem is one of the biggest things.
And like having these conversations is also just part of the groundwork too.
Especially when like the problem has not been named for so many years, to finally be like, that's the thing, is like, I think a really amazing start that so many people are getting into. But
I definitely agree.
Yeah. It's crazy. We've already gotten to an hour mark. So we've kind of reached the end here. Where can people find you online and that kind of thing?
Online, I am at The Danielle Allen on Instagram and www.danielleallenactor.com.
Amazing. Amazing. And then you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Laura_Marjoram and my website, www.lauramarjoram.com. And you can find this lovely show on Instagram at Overtures Show. There's two S's. I promise it looks right. And then if you're watching this episode, you found it. You're on YouTube.
Congratulations.
You made it. Throw a like, comment, subscribe, all that good stuff. And that helps support the show. And then I don't necessarily know when the next stream is yet. Planning is hard, but that's okay. That'll be coming up soon. But if you comment or if you subscribe on YouTube, you'll hopefully get a little reminder. And then on Instagram, I'm always posting updates, the most up-to-date updates there. So you can check it out and see in when we're on next. But yeah, Danielle, do you have any final thoughts for viewers live and in the future?
Just thank you for having me on, and I really enjoyed this conversation and getting to catch up.
Absolutely. Thank you to everyone who's watching. See you later. Bye.